You're listening to the Full Picture Podcast, a podcast highlighting diversity in the hundreds of roles featured in the end credits you almost never stay for. I'm John Green.
And I'm Darby Barton.
We sat down with camera operator and first AC Juan Chavez, whose preferred gender pronouns are he, him. Juan immigrated to the U.S. from Guatemala and came of age in Los Angeles, California. He paints a beautiful picture of how his cultural background influenced his career development and also shares some poignant advice to anyone pursuing a creative career.
According to Hofstede's Cultural Dimensions, the U.S. is one of the world's most individualistic societies, meaning our culture values individual achievement far more than community achievement. And at the completely opposite end of the spectrum, Guatemala is the world's least individualistic society, which means Guatemalan culture places a higher value on group or collective success.
This is super different.
Mm-hmm. Guatemalan culture also places a significantly higher value on caring and nurturing behaviors, which in the U.S. are often referred to as feminine qualities. In this episode, you'll hear a little bit about how Juan will speak to these differences when it comes to caring for a crew versus self and working well alongside women on set.
Juan's story is so encouraging and poignant, so we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did. Juan, thank you so much for being here today. It's great to have you on the Full Picture Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I would love to just hear a bit about what your job looks like on a day-to-day basis.
I think the industry is changing a lot. I definitely think that since now cameras are more affordable, everything's becoming more affordable. It's being interesting because my job is kind of changes day to day. That's why. But essentially, a camera assistant is in charge of camera. So we make sure that camera is working, that, you know, all of our whatever wireless camera is needing is working properly, and we do our best to, if there's any incidents or anything happen on set, we have to fix it pretty fast because there's not a lot of time. And I don't like having the assistant director waiting on camera. That's like the goal. So whatever I can do to help to make that easy, if I can make time management correctly so that, you know, I can build the camera by this certain time so that everything's ready to go, I'll do that. And so, yeah, essentially, I'm in charge of putting the accessories on the camera and making sure that it's working properly for the operator. And when I'm doing first AC, pulling focus.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit, Juan, how did you get into camera gear? Like, when did this start for you?
Well, my love for film actually started when I was 11 years old. That's when I wanted to do this. And I started off wanting to direct. I thought I wanted to be a director, and I was like, ooh, I'm directing, blah, blah, blah. But I always, you know, I was a director, I would always be on camera. I was always on the camera. I was always setting up the lights and kind of like the actors, I'd be like, yeah, you guys do your thing. So I'd always kind of leave it alone, but I was a director. I was the guy with the camera and the lights. And when I was like, I was in high school, I must've been like maybe 16, 17. When this teacher, her name's Amy Pope from Fairfax High School, she said, I think you're more of a DP. And I just kind of looked at her and went like, nah, you're crazy. Like, nah, I'm a director. But then I was like, huh, I wonder what a DP does. And so I went online and I started researching. And yeah, DP is the person in charge of camera and lighting and stuff. So I was like, oh, this is what I love. This is like cinematography is what I've actually been loving. And yeah. So the next step was try to get on any set that I could. And so I've worked any way that I could to get on sets. And at first I started actually doing a lot of lighting. I used to do a lot of grip and lighting. That was like biggest thing. And so I've learned a lot from a lot of people who I had mentors. And then I went to college. And then in college, I was kind of like, okay, I feel like I have lights and grip stuff pretty down. What is that stuff? I don't know. And then sure enough, I think camera was my weakness, my biggest weakness. So I started doing more research on that and started doing all of that. And I started working in my university at the camera rental house. So, and the guy who worked there, his name's David. He's been amazing. He used to work for the rental company called Otto Nemens. And so they rent for pretty big people. Like, I know Roger Deakins actually rents from there. And so he got to learn from him, and he knows a lot about a camera. So then I started stepping up more in my camera game. After I graduated my university, I wanted to do more camera assisting work, but it didn't work out. I was getting like one job a month. So I was like, okay, this is not the route. So I started applying to different places, and that's when I applied to Tilta, and Tilta was gracious and they opened the doors for me. And yeah, I didn't take that for granted. I just learned camera gear, and coming out of there, it was much better.
That's good. I love Tilta, and I love all the equipment that they've been able to make and how they've made filmmakers' lives easier. What was your experience like working there?
It was pretty hard.
I
was putting out a lot of fires every day, and I think there's a lot of people that expected the Nucleus to work like a Preston. A Preston is like $30,000 version. This is a $1,200 version. Of course, it's not going to work like the $30,000 version. There was a lot of technical calls, a lot of emails that I'd get daily. But I learned a lot. I was able to, I got thrown into the pool pretty deep, pretty early. And you just kind of roll with it, do your best and give it your all.
Did you go to a film program for your undergraduate?
I went to UC Irvine. And UC Irvine is film theory. So they have a minor in production, and that minor is actually amazing. All my homework was theory, which it's interesting because different schools have different ways of doing things. UC Irvine is more for independent filmmakers, I think. So a lot of their teachings was about independent filmmaker. And which was, it was interesting, but at the time I was dating a girl who went to USC. And so what I actually did is I would take the train from Irvine to USC and crash her classes. So I was kind of like doing that at least once to two times a week. And that's how I was able to kind of get a voice as an artist. I think school is great to have to kind of grow as an artist. And if you're able to do that and do productions on the side, kind of like I did, that's where you get more of the technical, the how to like build the lights and how to build the camera. And that helps a lot, because it's cool because I can go to film festivals and we can, throw references around and get along with other artist directors. And I think that's pretty cool. But yeah, I went to put it in there. I kind of went to UC Irvine and I crashed courses at USC. Whenever I had the chance.
I heard you earlier mention Fairfax High School. Is that Fairfax in LA on Fairfax Avenue?
Yeah, Fairfax and Melrose.
Yeah. My dad went to high school there a very long time ago, like in the 40s. But I'm curious what you think growing up in LA, just how that influenced you and your career path and maybe even like your perspective on your role.
I feel like there, a lot of people that come from other places that's not LA have a very strong opinion of what LA is. And it's oftentimes wrong. I was a pretty unique kid. In middle school, there was only one other kid doing film. And we worked together until now. He was the only other director. And then people were like, oh, who's doing the better movie, him or me? And at first it felt a little bit of a competition, but then I was like, no, we should be working together. We shouldn't be like competing because he's the only other person. So I reached out to him because I thought his movie looked cool. And then years later, he'll tell me that he saw my film and he thought mine was cool. And so I was like, man, if we put our heads together and do something, we can make something really cool. And he ended up going to Fairfax too. So in Fairfax, there weren't a lot of, it was like an after school program, and I participated in every after school program that I could to film. And one of my teachers, actually, her name is Mira Menon. She was my teacher for, I think, 1 year in where we shot projects. And right now she just got assigned to a Marvel show. So she's been working on a Marvel show, and she was at USC studying and working at Fairfax. So it's cool. I mean, it helps to open a lot of doors because we're local. Mm-hmm. And so I had access to, like, Red had a partnership with my school. And so I was able to kind of get my hands on Reds pretty early on and learn about them.
That's huge.
And yeah, that definitely helped. Back when the Red Epic was coming out. So I got to hang out at the studio one summer, and they were doing one of their educations, but it was for kids. They have like a Red camp for kids. So they recruited like a bunch of high school students to kind of, you know, look after the kids and teach them and see if they need any help, set up the equipment. But in order to, you know, do that, we needed to know the equipment too. So we got a lot of experience about how to use the cameras. And there was a lot of cool technology there. People from James Cameron's, like, Threality was there, and the Hobbit people were there. And so that was pretty cool. Yeah. And that definitely helped me later to know a bit more about cameras. But kind of going back to growing up in LA, I think I don't know, I feel like we're pretty normal. I don't think we're as fake as people say.
I don't think you guys are either, as someone who didn't grow up in LA.
Thank you.
How has your family responded to you pursuing film?
Oh my gosh, that's a funny story. So when I was 10, I kind of either wanted to be a lawyer or a film director. So
super similar.
Right? Yeah, actually, they're more similar. No, they actually are more similar than you think. Actors are a lot like lawyers because they have to do like a lot of pretending, and you change perspective. Lawyers have to like really change perspective to kind of work it on their side. But my dad got super excited. He was like, oh my God, my kid's going to be a lawyer. And so he was like, I'm going to take you to a courtroom. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So I was like, but I was like, a criminal courtroom. Because, you know, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be like criminal kind of lawyer. So I was like, okay. Took me to a courtroom. I walk in. I see a lawyer like asleep. And then I'm like in there, and it was just really boring, and all like there was like another lawyer I think drawing, and it was just like dead, and I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And from that moment on, I leaned more towards movies, and my dad was not happy about that. And it took him a long time to be supportive, but I think he's very supportive now, and it helps that I'm actually working on stuff and I tell him about it. Yeah. So now he gets excited, and that makes me very happy.
I can relate to that a lot. I think my parents very much wanted me to pursue careers that they knew would make me money. And then seeing me growing up and making money and being creative and enjoying what I do, I think makes them very happy.
That's amazing. There's a motivator that talks about that a lot. Like, his name's Gary B. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, oh, maybe at first your parents are going to be sad. But once they see you happy, they're going to be much happier that you're happy. I was just on a production. It's been like one of the biggest things I've done. And I was super happy. And I came on set, and the DP, we had the same last name, Chavez, and he looked at me, he's like, where are you from? And I was like, oh, I'm from Guatemala. And he's like, my wife is from Guatemala. I was like, no way, the DP was from Mexico. And then he goes, he looks at me, he goes, they don't really let you in much, huh? they don't really let you guys in, he said. And it's so true. I'm often on set the only Latino person. And it's very interesting. And I think it's just interesting in a lot of ways. Like, I think sometimes it's even harder to network because I don't have the same background as many people do. And so they'll like, this group be like, oh, I'm from this state. Oh, I went to this state. Oh, cool, cool. Then they have like all this like, and they could like vibe where they'll listen to like the same music and stuff. And sometimes as a like Latino person, it's different. Or sometimes they'll be like, oh, you didn't see this show? And I actually was born in Guatemala, and I came to the U.S. when I was 7. So in 2000, I came to the U.S. So my culture before that, it was mainly like Guatemalan culture. And so sometimes they'll be like, there's an artist that maybe released a song in the 2000 or 1999. And they'd be like, you don't know that song, or you don't know that? Like, how can you not? And there's two ways that they go about it. Sometimes, because I look young, they'll be like, oh, you're too young for that. Or they'll just be like, wait, what do you mean you don't know? Like, or they just don't get it. But it's just mainly, it's actually because my culture was completely different. Like, I didn't speak much English. I used to fail English, actually. In Guatemala, I had English classes, and it used to be my worst course. I used to hate it. But when I came here, I didn't even come thinking that there was a whole other language here, because my dad used to work here, and I was living in Guatemala with my mom, and I was missing him a lot, and it was really affecting me, and I used to get very sick, to the point where I ended up in the hospital 2 times. And so that kind of led my parents to be like, okay, well, let's see if it works out for them, for me to come here. And so when I came here, my only thought was that I was going to get to see my dad. Nothing else really. I really didn't process anything else as a kid, except for the fact that I was going to get to see my dad. So when I came here, and, you know, people didn't even speak English. It was weird. It was like it was a culture shock, honestly. And I don't recall it, but my mom says that I used to come home crying sometimes because, like, I just couldn't understand. And there were, like, other Latino kids in my school, but they all spoke English, or they spoke half English, half Spanglish. And I just couldn't understand them. I'd be like, I wouldn't know.
Do you think that experience kind of influenced your direction into movies?
It's very interesting because, like, my mom says that I would have pursued film even in Guatemala. And I go, yeah. Nah, I don't think so. But in Guatemala, my grandma also lives here. One of my grandmas from my dad's side. So she lived here, and she would always bring a camera to Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And then I would always mess with it. So this was like 4 or 5 year old me messing with the camera. And my parents would let me without my grandma knowing, or whenever she left the camera there. So they feel like I've always had like a connection towards camera. And entertainment. And I've also would always end up on TV. Like, they had this like toy drive that they would televise, and so for whatever, like, I decided to donate a bicycle, which was super rare. So then they like really interviewed me in Guatemala, and I came on there, and my dad would take me to the theater when I was little. I used to like movies even when I was little. And so, yeah, I don't know if, I don't know. I've always kind of had that thought. I've always wondered if I would have gravitated towards something in entertainment if I lived in Guatemala. But the opportunities over there are super, super low. So it's something that's not common, which I know I would love to shoot a movie in Guatemala one day. That'd be cool. Amazing. I would love to do that, honestly.
Thanks for listening to the Full Picture Podcast. We wanted to quickly share how you can support what Full Picture Podcast is doing to highlight diversity in the film industry. We know you hear this all the time, but it really is true that leaving a review helps other people find our podcast.
So if you enjoy the show, please leave us a quick review and share the podcast with one person you know.
You can also support us by contributing to our Patreon so we can keep creating impactful content. Now, back to the show.
What are some of the differences in terms of how the film industries work in the U.S. versus Guatemala?
They don't really make a lot of movies in Guatemala. There's an industry there.
Interesting.
But it's very, very small. There's been directors that have come out of Guatemala. There's actually a director that might be nominated for an Oscar this year, which would be really cool for foreign films. His name is Jairo Bustamante. And he did a version of La Llorona that's a little different. And it got a lot of praise right before COVID. And he was nominated for a Golden Globe, but didn't win. But they're saying that he has a good chance of going for the Oscars. So it'd be really insane. It'd be so cool if somebody from Guatemala wins. Yeah. And then last year there was a short film that was shot in Guatemala. But, you know, everyone who was behind the scenes definitely was not from Guatemala.
So does that mean in order to have a career in film, most people in Guatemala have to leave Guatemala?
There's an artist, Ricardo Arjona. He is pretty famous in the Latin community. He's from Guatemala, but he left Guatemala and went to Mexico, and that's where he started his career. So definitely, I don't think there's been any international people that in the entertainment world that really kind of live in Guatemala. There's been some artists and some people, but it's hard because it's just there's not a whole lot of support. The resources are very low, and there's not a lot of incentives for art.
Where would you say the majority of Latin film and media content is produced?
Definitely Mexico. And Spain. Spain, which is European. But yeah, Mexico is where a lot of... and we had a pretty famous actor, Eugenio Derbez. He shot a lot of stuff. He kind of made transition his way from Mexico into Hollywood. And I know that he's getting a lot of the incentives that LA's providing, because LA's giving like incentives for diversity. Mm-hmm. And I know that he's getting like a whole lot of that. But I'm like, oh, you're already kind of established. what about smaller people? Yeah.
That does happen a lot of times. Those incentives do end up going to bigger productions and well-known people, and smaller productions still kind of lose out.
Yep, that happens all the time. And it's interesting. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he tried funding some. I hope that the stuff that he's funding, you know, that people just as much as behind the scenes as in front of the scenes is you know, Latino. Because I think it's good to have on both, not just more representation on front of the camera, but also behind the camera. Mm-hmm. I would love to see more. On my sets, I've always ended up with more diverse crews, which has been really fun, actually. And something I don't really even think about. It kind of just happened. Like Mainline, which was a short film that I shot maybe 5 years ago. It ended up on Screamfest, which is a pretty big like horror festival. And that whole thing, it was like 80% women in that crew.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
That's amazing.
Like my first AC was a girl. She was like going to USC. My second AC was also a girl. My grip, I think it was grip or gaffer, was also a girl. So like, and then after a while, I was like, because I saw another conversation about that. And then I went, wait a minute. And I saw like the credits and it was like mostly girls. And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
I'm just curious, how did that experience of working predominantly with women differ from male dominated cast and crew experiences?
I feel like I'm a mama's boy. Like I love my mom. I'm always with my mom. So for me, it's like natural, like, and it's something that I like, it kind of didn't click until much later, but I was actually working with a lot of my bosses were female. And for me, it was like no big deal, you know, like, and I gave them the same amount of respect as any boss. Like, but then like, there was this one time where this crew guy was being weird to Kylie. He was definitely being like rough on her for no reason. I was kind of like, and that's when it hit me that like, whether it's conscious or subconscious, a lot of women don't get the same like respect as males do in the industry. And it like, it kind of hurt. There's like racism, there's sexism, but there's also like ageism. I often find myself targeted both as a minority and Latino, and that I look younger. A lot of people oftentimes think I'm younger than my actual age. So they don't give me the same amount of respect, or like they second guess me all the time. I'm always getting second guessed, or I'm always like, oh, how old are you? Oh, you don't know much because of your age. Mm-hmm. And so I also get targeted a lot because of that, especially when I was working at Tilta. Tilta was like one of the biggest ones. And that's when I got into one of my biggest things too, because the guy was like, how old are you? 25. And then... And he got to the point where we got so mad at, like, yeah, I like got so mad at each other that I was like, oh, I've shot more feature films than you ever did. I told him that. My coworker was like, oh, dude, that looked like it hurt. And he like tried to get me fired and stuff. But it was because he was trying, like, the film industry has very like, you know, there's a system as to why things are that way. And he was trying to do something completely different. And not only is like kind of like a bit of disrespect to like the 100 years of cinematography of technology that has gone into it, but he thought that he had to get his way. And he was being mean to me, so I was like, screw you. Like, but yeah, I find myself oftentimes in that situation where people are like, they see me super young, they'll be like, don't touch camera, or be like, only do like only do focus. And I'm like, well, you know, I can fix this stuff. I can really do it if you guys like let me. But I respect it, you know, and everyone has different ways of doing things, and this is kind of how it is.
I mean, I feel like I felt that a lot, you know, when I was younger. Because, like, you know, when you start, I was also 11 when I got into the film industry. And for me, I shot this movie in the backyard with my best friends. I had no way to edit it. We shot on mini VHS tapes. And I didn't know anything about running a camera. And so we were just rolling for, like, 2 hours. And then when I watched it back, I'm like, this is terrible. And I grabbed two VCRs and I put a blank tape in and I was hitting stop. Record, stop, record, and that's how I edited my first film, by just playing as the film was playing back live. I'm like, click, 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 keep that, delete that, and you know, like when you have those experiences when you're younger, you learn. When you're younger, your mind is so much more malleable, and you're able to take in all this information. And if you're taking it in, if you have talent and you're taking in all this information, yeah, you can be 18 years old and be way better at camera than someone who's been doing it for 20 years, because mm-hmm. they're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Yep. And you know, there's also a thing in where, you know, like the younger you are, the more technology you're kind of exposed to. So mm-hmm. The quicker you learn newer technology, I feel. And yeah. I think that has to do with it too.
Yeah. I think that's why, you know, we have a younger generation that is totally okay with digital film. Like there's still this argument between older directors and DPs that are like, no, you've got to shoot on real film. It's not cinema if you shoot on film. But having digital cameras be more accessible to more people, and it's allowing even a lot more minorities now being able to come up and make films themselves because they can afford it.
Yep, that's exactly it. Like, film was so expensive. And not so many people didn't have access. That's one thing that, you know, a lot of people bash on Red, but I'm kind of thankful for Red, because
yeah.
Red was kind of the founder. A lot of the people that did that, they mm-hmm. they kind of made it way more. They definitely made it a lot more accessible to me. Yeah. And I don't think I would have the career that I have if it wasn't for Red. So it's pretty cool that, yeah, I definitely think, yeah. But I mean, I would love to. I haven't shot film ever.
Me neither.
And I would love to one day. I mean, I would love to just kind of, I know the theory behind it. I know how to use light meters. I know how to like, I'll do all that. It's just no production has ever, and I'm hoping that soon I do get to even just AC on a film yeah. shoot. That would be really, really cool.
I think that's why I like companies like Blackmagic, that like they're trying to make the highest quality image possible in the cheapest form factor they can make to make it accessible.
I think it's our job to learn it, you know, like mm-hmm. like that's what I do when I bought my Red. Like, I spent hours just learning every setting possible yeah. on it and everything that you can do, because if we're able to really push those cameras to their best, and we can make beautiful images, or mm-hmm. there's people who don't know how to use them, and it's such a waste.
How do you feel about owning a camera as an operator, and do you think that that's something that's important for people coming up to be able to do?
Yeah, I mean, the whole having the camera kind of helped me shoot DJ, one of my favorite artists of all time. Mm-hmm. That was really what got me in there. And I feel like, yeah, if you want to be an artist, if you want to create things, then definitely I think owning a camera is important. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have to make sure that you do use it. I think using it is just as important as having it. So even if it means, you know, like not making any money off of it, or barely making it, I think it's still worth if the craft is going to be good. Yeah. So if they're willing to spend the money on us on other things, then I think it's a good thing to have, because mm-hmm. then you can keep growing and growing and growing, and that's the whole point.
So many things are going wireless in equipment these days, that like now you're mostly pulling focus wirelessly. So you're able to be off somewhere else offset with your own monitor. How do you like that experience when you're working as a first AC versus, you know, being right next to the cam op or something like that?
I preferred wireless Mainly because on lower productions, it's often on location. And on location, it's much smaller. Everything's more compressed. So yeah. There's many times where you just can't be next to camera or director can't be next to camera. So it's great being able to be wireless and being able to pull focus all wirelessly. Yeah.
So is there a typical persona that a camera person tends to embody?
Very interesting you say that, because I think a lot of the older people in film are very military kind. In general, like they all have a very military way of every, like a lot of them were in the military too. So there's like, you know, it's like all this like making your own stuff to make it work, or like there's all these like guys who ride like motorcycles, or like, you know, like it's been interesting. And I'm not like that, I feel like. So I'm definitely a little different. I'm definitely more on the nerdy side, I feel, of everything. But it depends. Different crews have different personas, and sometimes it's about finding like your family, one person said to me, to kind of grow with. And I would personally love to keep growing with the people that I'm working with right now. Like, we're all kind of growing together, and I think that's like the best thing, because oftentimes the big people can't really bring you on set. I've talked to them, I begged, I've tried, I've done everything I possibly could, and it's been always like a no. There's been a lot of rejection. But whenever I've asked for advice, they've always given me advice. So that's been cool. So don't ask for jobs, ask for advice.
Is there any piece of advice, or I guess just painting of the picture of life in the industry, that you wish someone had given you as a younger person?
I've been lucky. I'm trying to remember advice that I was given to earlier. I feel like whenever people gave me advice, I always did my best to listen to it. So if there's people giving you advice, definitely listen to it. And I think patience is so important. I think patience is like, and it's hard because I've been blessed that my parents started being like way more supportive, and they allowed me to kind of go to school. Well, they really wanted me to go to school. So even if it was for film, they wanted me to have a bachelor's degree. So it was good that I had that, and I respected their wishes. And there's people who just kind of want to jump into it right away. And, you know, I think patience is so important, because patience, if you truly want to be a director or a DP or one of the big roles on a set, then you have to have something to say. You have to be an artist. And I think that's something that a lot of people kind of lack in, the artistry in film. And that's something that school helped me. And at the time, even when I went to school, I felt like the professors really wanted to push me for me to have a voice. And at that time, I didn't really had a voice. I was still learning. So it's just as important, especially when you're young, to study like the big people. It's okay to study blockbusters. It's okay to go to the movies and get lost in it. You don't have to like find that like that voice or like that artistry, that sense, because that comes with time. That comes with like life experiences. Once you're able to live life, then you have something to say. So I still feel like I still have a lot to live, and I'm still finding my voice. And then, so patience, I think, is key.
Who is one person you would like to meet or talk to?
Oh my God. I've been so blessed, honestly. Cinematographers, I've already met them all. Like, I've met most of them already. I don't think there's one I think Rodrigo Prieto is one I haven't met, but I've met Lubezki. I've met Maddie Libetic remembers me, because one time I was like, hey man, my name is Juan, you might not remember me. He's like, I remember you. And I was like, no way. So we always kind of like, we run into each other every once in a while. I met Roger Deakins last year, and that was really cool. And last year was kind of rough for me, because I was still like figuring a lot of things out. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, he told me how he got fired from two jobs. So imagine Roger Deakins getting fired from movies. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, it's all about getting back up. So I've been blessed to have, oh my God, like Larry Fong too. Larry, so I love magic. I love magic. And so this cinematographer is known for being a magician and cinematographer. And he's done movies like, he did, I think, oh my gosh, he did Batman versus, he did Justice League. He mm-hmm. was Justice League. And he did 300, and he works a lot with Zack Snyder. And so I ran into him at a Barnes & Noble's, and I was like, okay, there's two things. I love magic, and I love cinematography. And he was like, really? And I was like, come sit down. And I was like, he was like, show me a trick. And I was like, okay. And I was like shaking. But he was so awesome. And oh my That's God, cool. Whenever I hit him up, like whenever I ask him for advice, he gives me. He was the one that told me to have patience, actually.
Yeah,
because I was right when I was about I was really getting desperate about Tilta, and I was just like stressed out, and so I messaged him and I was like, what does it take to be in your crew, like what do I have to, and he was kind of like, well, let me tell you my story. He didn't get to shoot a film until he didn't go to grad school until he was in his 30s. Wow. He didn't shoot his first feature until he was in his like mid to late, I think 35, he said 35 or 38. And he didn't shoot his first studio picture until he was 45. So when he said that to me, I was like, he was saying like, yo, you gotta be patient. And I was like, you're right. And so I like completely calmed down after that. And I've let things run. And I've just keep growing the relationships I have. I think he's also been the one to tell me like to keep growing, to find a group and keep growing with them. So that's what I've been doing. And, you know, if I get hopefully I'll get a studio picture at age 45. That would be amazing. And I would know that that's their age that you have to wait. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a solid, solid story to end on. Juan, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us and for sharing your experience and your story. It's been very inspiring and very enjoyable to hear you speak today. It's been great.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been amazing.
Thanks for listening to the Full Picture Podcast. We're so glad to have you journey with us as we hear from diverse industry professionals and paint a full picture of the film industry. You can find us on social media at Full Picture Podcast.
And you can follow Juan at Juan_cinema.
Don't forget to leave us a review, contribute to our Patreon for special bonuses, and share the podcast with one person. Tune in next week for more close-ups on diverse industry pros.